Hello, 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 and welcome to the Cloud English Podcast. My name is Luke. It is February 18th, 2022. 2023, 2024. I'm not sure. Well, welcome to the Cloud English Podcast. It's great to have you. Today we're going to be talking about English for travel situations. Now, we have done a podcast on this before, but we're going to be covering some different stuff today, including talking about preferences. We're going to be talking about some phrasal verbs, and we're going to be looking at a few other things. So I hope it will be interesting. Anyway, welcome. Just a few things right off the top. So there should be a course coming out by the end of the month. So I will be posting the trailer to that on the YouTube channel, and I will be generally sending out announcements and launch coupons, things like that. So look out for that. That should be an interesting one. That is a really interesting, different one for me, a departure, you could say, from the norm. It's going to be a course about culture, which may sound strange, but you know, I find that people want to learn the words and the phrases, but then maybe miss the bigger picture. And so this is meant to be more of a bigger picture course that will cover some of those things that you may otherwise not really get when you hear native English speakers talking about stuff. And so that is coming out very soon. Let's see, what else? If you are interested in getting the yearly membership or the monthly membership, you can check that out in the links in the description. The monthly membership is at the yearly price, so it's 30% off, but paid monthly. So that's I think, heck of a deal. In my opinion, an amazing deal. If you haven't already done so, I would appreciate if you could hit the like button and subscribe. That is a great way to support the channel, to support the show, to support me in general, in addition to grabbing courses when you feel the need. All right. Anything else? Is there anything else? I don't think so. I think we can get into it. Well, we're going to be talking about travel, as I said, and we are going to be getting into preferences. But before we do that, I thought we could just, since, you know, while we're here, get into something that has changed recently. Now, you might be expecting me to talk about, since I often talk about AI-related stuff, you may expect me to talk about, what's it called? Sora. If you haven't heard of Sora, Sora is a new, let's say, product from OpenAI, which is, instead of generative text or generative AI images, it's generative AI videos, and it's pretty crazy. I mean, it looks very, very realistic, but I don't have access to it, and so I'm not going to really talk about it. But what I will talk about is that something interesting has happened with Google, and we're going to play around with it a little bit, but I've always done stuff in ChatGPT because I have found it to be better. And I do still think that's true, actually. However, Google recently updated their model or their chat interface, public-facing chat interface, to something called Gemini instead of Bart. First of all, that's a better name. Let's just say that. That is a much better name by far. But it is also better, much better, significantly better. So if you haven't played around with it recently, the advantage, obviously, of using something like Gemini is that it's going to be higher quality. The free version is going to be better than the free version of ChatGPT. So ChatGPT currently, as I'm saying this, is 3.5, which has a lot of weaknesses. 4 is way better. And Gemini is, I would say, better than 3.5. Now, Gemini also has a paid version. I haven't really played with that yet. So I don't know what the gap is between the... I might try it. I'm going to try it for a month just to see what the gap is between free Gemini and paid Gemini. And paid Gemini, I don't know if it's called Pro or Advanced. I can't remember. I don't know. Paid Gemini versus paid ChatGPT using GPT-4. So I'm keeping track of these things. But what we can do is just try it out a little bit and see kind of what we can come up with. What do you say? Why don't we do that? So let's hop over here to no longer Bard. Thank God. Bard is, can I say dead? Yeah, I think Bard is dead. What? I'm a big fan of the word Bard. But for this kind of thing, it's very silly. Okay, so since we're on the topic of travel, I want to come up with a travel plan and see how good it is and see how many links I can get and see if I can push back and see how really accurate it is. Let's say my goal here is I want to do non-touristy travel, non-touristy stuff. So I want to hike. I want to do stuff that locals do. I want to eat local food. I want to travel on a budget. I don't want to spend a ton of money on 4- and 5-star hotels, right? So I want to travel on a budget. I want to live like a local. I want to do real stuff instead of touristy stuff. And let's say I'm going to be doing this in Southeast Asia, okay? So help me come up with a travel plan for August in Southeast Asia. Let me see. Can I just talk? Allow. Help me come up with a travel plan for a trip in August in Southeast Asia. I plan to travel for 3 to 4 weeks and want to focus more on adventure travel, backpacking stuff, local stuff, and want to avoid a lot of touristy things. I am traveling on a pretty tight budget, so I don't want to spend a lot of money on fancy hotels. I want to find real local food. I want to find real stuff to do. I want to meet real local people and hang out with them. So help me come up with a plan, please. Okay. That's a very good speech to text, I have to say. Let's see what we get. Come on, Gemini. Let's see what we get. Adventure travel plan for Southeast Asia on a budget, 3 to 4 weeks. With its diverse landscapes, rich cultures, and friendly locals, Southeast Asia is perfect for a perfect backpacker's paradise, especially for those seeking adventure experiences off the beaten path. Here's a possible itinerary for your 3 to 4 week trip, focusing on budget-friendly options. Now, I do this because I have done this, meaning I have done budget backpacking in Southeast Asia. And so I'm going to know if this is bad because I've done most of this stuff, right? Okay. Vietnam, 10 days. That's a lot of days in Vietnam. Okay. Start in Hanoi, immerse yourself in the chaotic charm of the capital, explore the old quarter, visit Ho Chi Minh Mausoleum, and savor street food. Okay, that does sound good. Stay at hostels or guest houses. Yes, I probably would do that. And then I have a TripAdvisor link for the old quarter in Hanoi. And then Halong Bay, cruise among the majestic limestone karsts on a traditional junk boat, kayak in hidden lagoons, and visit floating villages. This sounds pretty good. This sounds pretty good. Choose a budget-friendly cruise option with dorm rooms instead of private cabins. I'm not against to staying in dorm rooms. Sure, that sounds good, actually. Looks like I got another link here. I'm not gonna click on the link right now, but I'm assuming this looks like a real website. I know hotels.com. Okay, a national park here. Okay, this is pretty detailed. Now, okay, so 5 days then in Cambodia, Siem Reap. Okay, so what are we doing here? Relaxing on an island, snorkeling, boat trips, kayaking, backpacking, bicycle trips. Okay, this looks okay. This looks not bad. And then Laos. Okay. World Heritage City offers stunning temples, vibrant markets, and beautiful natural surroundings. Explore by bicycle, take a cooking class, learn about traditions. Okay, so, I mean, the plan itself, overview plan, seems pretty good. Cave-filled lagoons and waterfalls and go tubing for an adventurous experience. So I did say I want to meet locals. Homestays are available near the cave entrance. Now, I'm going to find out more about that and see what it can tell me. Copy that. Thailand, 5 to 7 days. So I would change this. I'd probably spend more time in Thailand and less time in... I would do the 10 days in Thailand and the 5 to 7 days in Vietnam. But that's just me. But this looks okay. This looks all right. This is very detailed. Okay. Tell me more about the homestays near the caves. Okay. I want to learn about how I can stay with a family or something near the caves. Sure, homestays near the caves mentioned in your itinerary. Tam Kong Lor in Laos. Kong Lor Echo Lodge. This is a great option for those looking for a comfortable and relaxing stay near the cave. They offer private bungalows with balconies overlooking the river, as well as hammocks and a restaurant serving local dishes. They also organize tours and other nearby attractions. Okay, so it looks like TripAdvisor is offering an option to get a private bungalow. Mr. High's Homestay. This homestay is located in a quiet village near Phong Nha Cave. They offer basic rooms with shared bathrooms. Oh, okay. So this is a specific Mr. High's homestay. I think this is a specific homestay that I get to stay in. Is that how that works? Let me see. Let's take a look. Okay. So, all right, let's zoom in a little bit here. Mister suggests that it is a person. Where is the actual homestay? Okay, these are just the destinations, caves. These caves look really cool, by the way. Wow, very cool. Very cool. Oh, okay. And then here are the homestays. $13. $13 a night for homestay? That seems reasonable. Let's see. Oh, a bungalow. $18. Again, not bad. Not bad at all. Palafita Bungalow. I want to see some pictures of... What is this? What the heck is that? Oh, okay. Oh, beautiful. All right. I can do this. Not bad. Not bad. All right. So the previous version of Gemini would make up so much stuff. So much stuff would be just nonsense. So it is definitely improving significantly. I think I would have a bit more of a back and forth if I wanted to actually plan a trip. I mean, I think it's a pretty good starting point. I would learn a lot using this because there's so many options of things I might want to do. But I think I would probably have a lot of back and forth to actually narrow down my travel plan. But play with it for different things. I'm curious to know what you guys think of Gemini. Try it for writing, try it for all kinds of things. Really try to push the limits and get good at prompting. And the course on either writing or improving your English with ChatGPT, those same prompts work in any other generative AI large language model. So try it out. Check out that course. That's in the links in the description if you haven't already done so. Don't forget to hit the like button and subscribe, and also get a free course in the links in the description. All right. Okay. We have some other, we're going to be talking about preferences in a second, and I think that's going to be useful, interesting, useful, exciting even, possibly exciting. Possibly even very exciting. Are you hearing any noise? It's because I need to work on my noise blocking. Improve that a little bit. Let's see. I need to also check one thing. Give me one second while I just check to make sure, because we are doing this live, and I just want to make sure that it's working okay. I want to make sure it's working all right. Yeah, I think it is. Okay. All right, let's hop into preferences. When we want to go on a trip somewhere, we will probably talk about how we feel about different places. We'll talk about how we feel about the type of travel we want to do. And why do we do this? Because maybe we're making decisions and we're traveling with other people and we're trying to figure out what's the best place for everybody, right? So we're going to talk about some English phrases that we can use to state preferences. And this is pretty easy. Some simple phrases, and we're going to look at some examples that you can use when you're sort of explaining how you feel about a particular style of travel, a particular place, etc. Okay? So we would rather. This is where maybe you're explaining this to a travel agent. I know that's kind of an outdated thing, but some people still do that. However, it's the same if you're saying it to one other person. I would rather. We would rather. I would rather. It's the same thing. We would rather fly business class if it doesn't break the bank. That means if it doesn't cost too much. Got to have that extra leg room, right? Maybe we really care about comfort on the flight. Some people have that as a top priority. Okay, fair enough. So we would rather choose flights that offer an overnight layover in a cool city. Bonus adventure, right? So most people don't want to do a layover. Layover is where you stop in the middle, right? And it's kind of annoying. But if it's a 24-hour layover, that can be kind of fun, actually, because then you can check out that place. And it's almost like having another little side trip on the way. That can be cool. I've done that a few times. Sometimes that's great. We would rather spend a bit more on direct flights than deal with multiple connections. Now, this is about flights, but I want to be clear that you can say this for any type of preference that you have when you're explaining something, right? So we would rather, or I would rather, maybe backpack and hike than just sit by the beach. Or I would rather do a lot of historical tours than spend most of our time going to nightclubs, for example, right? I'm stating my preferences about this trip that we're going on. We've already decided where, for example, and I'm going to be clear about what kind of stuff I want to do. Now, we're looking to is a little different than we would rather. We would rather is a simple preference, one thing more than another. We're looking to is more like stating a particular, maybe we could say stating a particular goal. So we're looking to cram as many historical sites into our trip as possible. Cram suggests you're really stuffing it in there. You're really kind of maybe doing a little bit too much, but that's okay. It can be very intense. You know, when you're working with a travel agent or you're working with ChatGPT or Google Gemini or something like that, you want to state these preferences because a leisurely trip and an intense trip are two very different trips. And some people like a lot of intensity. They want to get all the juice out of their vacation. Okay, so cram as many things in there. Or we're looking to hit up the must-see museums, right? If it's got a lot of famous paintings or dinosaurs, we're there. So that would be, again, saying this is an objective or a goal that I have. We're looking to catch some local music. Catch some. That means just experience it. Maybe I'm really into the cultural side of things. Okay. So catching some theater. Again, using I here, I'm looking to is okay. I want to give you stuff that's general that you could use no matter who you're talking to, okay? What about generally prefer? What's the difference between generally prefer and the other ones we've talked about so far? This, I would say, is to be big picture. Let's say it like that. To be a little bit more big picture. So if I say, for example, I want to, what was the first one? I would rather fly business class. I would rather fly business class. Well, that is a pretty strong preference over another thing. But if I say we generally prefer, maybe I'm being a little bit less specific, and I'm just giving a general criteria. So this would be a good one for criteria. We generally prefer staying at resorts where we can sip cocktails by the pool. Okay, so there are probably a lot of resorts, if not all resorts like that, but maybe some resorts are a little bit less, I don't know, fancy, and maybe they don't serve alcohol. So maybe alcohol is important to me. If it is, then maybe I'll say it like that. We generally prefer booking places with a killer view. Well, what defines a killer view? That means just a good view, right? Well, a killer view could be one overlooking the sea. It could be one in the forest somehow. It could be one overlooking a valley. It's a beautiful thing outside the window, basically, right? So a killer view would be a general preference. We generally prefer accommodations that offer cooking classes. Now, that is a little specific, I must say. For that one, you could use it. It's okay. I think generally we want to be a little bit more broad, right, with these. But while that is a specific one, I guess it still works. Okay. Next one, we're really into. Okay. This is where you state a simple thing that you like, right? We're really into what? We're really into finding the highest peak. Well, that means not just basic hiking. That means really intense hiking. I actually want to climb a mountain. We're really into those off the beaten path nature walks where you end up somewhere magical and totally Instagram worthy. Okay, so this is what I really, really like. We're really into, and here you can be very specific. we're really into coffee. We're really into coffee. So if you are saying those preferences to someone who's helping you organize your trip, or you say I, and you're talking to one other person or a group of friends you may travel with, I'm really into coffee. I want to make sure that we at least experience a few different interesting coffee shops, local coffee shops that I've heard about, if that's okay with all of you, right? We're really into guided night hikes. Now, how specific is that? That is extremely, extremely specific. So this one is good for talking about specifics. 10-2 is, again, all of these are generally talking about preferences, but we're doing it kind of in different ways. So 10-2 is less about here are my preferences. This is what I like, and more about what I have done in the past experiences, past trips that I've taken, right? We tend to hunt down the local food markets. We tend to ask locals for their favorite eateries, right? We tend to splurge on one fancy dinner per trip. So if I say we tend to do that, then that means we're kind of looking for that same thing for the next one. And the way that we're saying it is that this is what I usually do when I travel. So I'm not looking to eat a very expensive fancy meal every single night, but I am looking to maybe find one really good restaurant that costs a lot of money and eat there one night. Okay, so basically find me the best restaurant. Help me find the best restaurant. So I think that's a pretty good one as well. Typically, this is very similar, right? This is a typical thing that happens in the past. Typically, we'd rather join a small, quirky tour than the really big touristy stuff. Typically, we're on the lookout for workshops or classes. Maybe I really want to meet locals and do local stuff. Typically, we're on the lookout for workshops or classes. Typically, we love finding those hidden gems, whether it's a secluded beach or an ancient ruin off the main path. Okay, so there, maybe I'm going to be looking for some not even main tourist websites. Maybe I'm going to be looking on Atlas Obscura or something like that, which is, by the way, a great website for finding things that are off the beaten path, off the main path. Okay, so those are the simple little phrases that you can use to talk about preferences for a trip. Again, whether it's for when you're talking to a travel agent, or you're getting help from ChatGPT, or you're telling a group of friends, or you're telling one person, or you're looking in the mirror. I suppose you could do it in the mirror as well. Just to recap, I would rather, and you could, by the way, turn that into a simple question, right? We would rather. We're looking to, that's our goal, our objective. We generally prefer, stating a preference, generally being broad. We're really into a specific thing that we really like. We tend to, things that we usually do and have done in the past. Typically, again, things that we tend to do and have done in the past, most of the time. And if you use those to talk about preferences, not just for trips, but in general, then you'll have more variety in your language. If you have any questions about these, please let me know in the comments if you haven't already done so. Don't forget to hit the like button and subscribe, and also get a free course in the links in the description. Okay. Give me 1 second. I am just answering a quick text message, if that's okay. Right, now we're going to talk about some phrasal verbs. Some phrasal verbs. Mm-mm-mm. I just had to send a quick text. All right, let me pop out the old blackboard. Hope all of you are having a great day, wherever and whenever you are. I hope you're thinking about, I think travel is a great thing because it helps you to zoom out. You may remember a book I talked about called The Origin of Consciousness and the Breakdown of the Bicameral Mind by Julian Jaynes. And I did sort of a book review of that book. But in the book, to really simplify it, he says that humans, not that long ago, were not conscious in the way that we're conscious today. They were more unconscious, and they had a sort of self and other relationship to a voice in their head, which was actually in the form of the voice of the king, which they may have called the king or called God. So there's your regular self just doing stuff, and then you hear this voice that says, go down to the river and talk to the using language, by the way, already using language. But I guess the language usage would have been more automatic, more utility-based language. And, you know, go down to the river and negotiate with the fishmonger. And get the best price on blah, blah, blah. Carp, octopus, sea cucumbers. And at some point, traders, or due to upheavals, natural disasters, people kind of clashed, groups of people. And so your voice, which is God, to you, my voice, they're different and they're telling us different things. So then there was a kind of innovation, and the innovation was something like, oh, the voice is me. Ah, well, if the voice is me, then I could listen to it or not, and I can turn it on and turn it off, and I can actively use it to dialogue with myself. So this is a stepping back to realize that this thing is not just directing me and telling me to go down to the river and negotiate with the fishmonger for 7 sea cucumbers. This is, that might be a good idea. Should I do that? I don't know if I'll, maybe instead I'll hire somebody to do that. So there's more flexibility in the way that we think. That's a different type of consciousness. And this is called the origin of consciousness, according to Julian Jaynes. Well, I think that that is also happening to us now, where we live in a cultural context that comes with a bunch of assumptions about what's good, what's bad, what's true, what's interesting, what's beautiful, what's normal, what's weird, what's crazy, what's funny. And this is like because we just accept it. We grow up in it, and that's just true. Well, this is similar to how, if that theory is true, how people would hear their voice. The voice just says, go down to the river. And I just go down to the river like a robot. Well, in the same way, the culture that you are immersed in, that you grow up in, you just accept it. And that's just how it is. And it tells you to do this at this stage of life, and it tells you to start a family, and it tells you whatever it tells you. But when you travel, what you realize is, yes, everyone is similar in the sense that they have fears, cares, problems, strong emotions about things. Everyone is similar in that. But the specifics, the way that those things manifest culturally, are very different from place to place. Norms, faux pas, humor, music. And what you have to very quickly accept is either my culture is the best one, and all of this stuff that I'm experiencing when I travel is crazy and wrong and bad, or it's all relative. It's all relative, meaning because I grew up in my culture, I feel that all of this stuff that I grew up with is normal and good. And the reason that other people feel that their culture is normal and good and not extreme is because they grew up in that. But if we both feel that way because we both grew up in our respective cultural milieus, then there is no privileged point of view. And then you think about how many hundreds or thousands of unique cultural groups there are in the world, and you realize, wow, just on this one little planet, you're like a plant growing up in a particular environment, and the environment shapes you. And if you just stay locked in that, you never really get the whole thing. But if you travel, you can never get the whole thing, but you get much more of it. And it breaks down your cultural assumptions. So it's not just a voice in your head. It's a set of beliefs, a set of feelings, a set of views that get loose. And then you start to say to yourself, this is just what happened to me, right? Oh, actually, I kind of like the way of eating where all the food is in the middle of the table. And it's not about my food on my plate, but it's about the food in the middle of the table. That's kind of interesting. I kind of like that. Maybe I'll start doing that. Oh, I kind of think, wow, wearing shoes in the house is weird, because you're tracking in everything from outside into your house, into your carpet. That's crazy. Now that I've experienced no shoes in the house. And then sort of you start to build up this new level of agency, which I think is similar to what happened with consciousness. Again, if that theory is true, no, it's unprovable, really. I think it's unprovable. Richard Dawkins said it's either a work of complete genius or something like total insanity, total madness, something like that. Utter nonsense, rubbish, maybe he said. It's either a work of complete genius or utter nonsense, rubbish, something along those lines. Yeah, so as people mix their voices, we're not the same, and they realize, oh, this voice is just me, and I can choose where to point it. I can point my consciousness around like a flashlight rather than it just being directed at me. In the same way, when you travel, you realize, oh, I have these preferences, but actually they're not the only ones, so maybe I can choose some others. then you start to kind of put together a new set of preferences, and you could just choose which ones work for you. And there are some real advantages to that. The family style, home life, sense of humor, all of that stuff. It's really interesting to be able to kind of pick and choose different things and build a new, not identity, a new perspective, a new way of thinking that is, I think, possible when you travel a lot. I don't travel as much as I used to, but I want to get back to it because that is a very important part of life, in my opinion, I think. Okay. All right, let's get into our phrasal verbs, shall we? Shall we? Shall we? Let me make sure that my pen is working okay. I've had troubles with it in the past. It's been bad news. Sometimes it slows down in a very strange way. All right, let's go over to the blackboard. Shall we? Oh, why am I way over here? Let me fix myself. There we go. There we go. Grace says, when do you have live lessons? I'm afraid we're live right now, Grace, actually. Oliver Riva, hello, welcome. Thanks, Grace. Thanks, Oliver. Thanks for being here. Yeah, we're live at the moment as we speak. This is live. This is live. Okay. And again, sorry if you're hearing any engine noises outside. I need to improve my noise cancellation. It's a project for me. We'll get there. Okay. Okay. Phrasal verbs for travel. We're going to be talking about these in the context of travel, but I will mention the other uses as well. And some of these might be familiar, but I'm just going to mention them because we, you know, if we have a little bit of overlap between them, I think that is okay. The first one we're going to talk about is set off. Set off. Hello. What? Hold on. Give me a second. I see it on this screen. Why do I not see it on that screen? Give me a second. Yes, it's there, but it's not showing up. Hold on. Let me see if that works. Okay, there we go. Oh, there we go. That's pretty weird. Okay, there we go. Let me make sure that everything's lined up now. It's very strange. Yeah, okay. Okay. This whole pen thing has been such a pain. All right. Our first travel phrasal verb is set off. Now, the simple meaning of this is to leave. right? That's a V. To leave. But it is not always exactly the same as leave. Because if you're just going out for 5 minutes to get some eggs from the supermarket, when you leave your home, you probably won't say, "We set off to get eggs." The phrasal verb "set off" is leave. It's usually more like leave for a journey, right? A road trip, a family trip, an all-day thing. It doesn't have to be a long journey that, you know, is 3 weeks long, but it has that sort of feeling to it when we say set off. So that's the difference between set off and leave in regards to travel specifically. So let's look at a few examples here. We're setting off at dawn to avoid the traffic. Okay, we're leaving at dawn to avoid the traffic. That's when we're going. So it's the moment of leaving. It's when we depart. And another word that we can use is depart. Depart is more formal. Depart would be more often used specifically for the airport, for the boat. The flight departs at 7:25. And in fact, when you look at the board in the airport, you see two things. You see departures and arrivals. Departures and arrivals on the board. They set off on their backpacking trip through Europe last summer. They set off on their backpacking trip. So this is definitely something like a journey. A journey. Right? And last summer is not too specific. So that's the flexibility of set off, is that it could be very specific, like we should set off at dawn, which could be 5 a.m. or something. That's very specific. That's a pretty specific time. Or they set off last summer. So it could be a pretty specific time, or it could be a pretty general. It could be a pretty general time. Okay? So just to be clear on that. Now I'll just mention there is another meaning of set off that is very common. And that would be something like an alarm or something that is triggered by another thing, right? Let me explain what I mean by that, okay? So the loud noise set off the dogs barking. Okay, so because of the noise, then the dogs start barking. Okay. But some things are triggered by something else, right? So maybe there's some kind of alarm that is triggered by loud noise, right? Or maybe the fire alarm is set off by smoke. So the burning pizza set off the smoke alarm. The burning pizza set off the smoke alarm. Okay, so that would be a thing that is triggered. It's the same as the dogs, right? But it's triggered by the smoke. You can also have something set off by a fierce debate, for example, set off by a comment. Is comment set off a fierce or heated debate? Okay, well, same basic thing. They're all the same. Okay, so just to be clear on that, I want to be very, very clear. All right, now we're going to be talking about Take off. Take off. Take off. This has a lot of different meanings. The simple meaning of take off is something like take off your hat indoors, please. Take off your hat indoors. It's polite to, take off your hat when you go inside. Or please take off your shoes before you enter the house. He took off his hat before he entered the church, something like that, right? But the other meaning related to travel is usually the flight itself, the airplane itself. So let's look at a couple of examples here. Our flight takes off in just an hour, so we should hurry. I fell asleep about 10 minutes after takeoff. Okay, so this is important to know because, and also you pay attention to the fact that this is one word, right? This is the moment that the plane leaves the ground. So when you're traveling, you have several different things. You have takeoff, and then, but you also have your boarding time, right? You see on the board, you say flight is now boarding. Well, the boarding time is usually 40 minutes before the takeoff time. So you need to be there way earlier usually. And if your flight is supposed to take off at 7:15 and you get to the gate, at 7:15, well, the plane will not be at the gate anymore. The plane will be out on the runway, taxiing, getting ready to take off, right? So usually when people talk about the time that the flight takes off, there's a sense of panic if it's only 1 hour from now, because the flight may be boarding in 20 minutes, right? But often it's a way to put pressure on people because it's happening soon or it's at this time. Well, our flight takes off at 3:30, so that means we should leave 3 hours before to make sure we get there in time to go through security and check our bags and then check in at the gate before they close the gate before the plane, you know, takes off. So it's usually a way to talk about time. It's not only for that, but if you're talking about the thing itself, often it will be this noun form. And when phrasal verbs are used as nouns, they become one word, right? So you're talking about this now as some kind of event. I fell asleep after 10 minutes after takeoff. So the plane goes, that's that moment the plane leaves the ground, and then I'm asleep 10 minutes after, okay? So hopefully that's clear, both forms of this, and it's very common, and it is often used in the first one to talk about we should leave, time, to add a sense of urgency. But now I have to say something about take off because it references the flight, the airplane leaving the ground. So her online store took off. After getting tagged by some celebrity, maybe a celebrity bought something from your online store and then really liked it, so they tagged your product or you or your Instagram account on Instagram or something like that, and that, you know, your store was doing okay before, but now your online store has skyrocketed. Now it's very successful. So this takeoff thing is the same as the airplane. It's going like this and it goes. This is talking about growth, about success, about a startup company, about a platform, a service, a product, a career, someone's music career. My music career really took off after that show that I did in Seattle. right? Because of that, something happened. Somebody posted something. It took off after that. So I gained success after that. The band's career took off after this song was featured in a hit movie, for example. Okay? Now, next. Our next one is check in. Now, check in will be pretty familiar. Check in, one meaning of check in is when we know something is going on and we want to quickly make sure things are okay, to a check the status of something. For example, I know that somebody is working on a custom thing that I ordered, right? Maybe I ordered a custom jacket, and I know it's a process that takes a long time, and I stop by this tailor's shop, and I just want to check in to see if there's, to see the progress, right? So that should be familiar. A mother checking in on her son who is playing in the other room, just looking in the door to make sure everything is okay, to make sure he's not eating Legos or something like that. Or I know that my friend is not feeling well, so I stop by my friend's house to check in. But check in has a very common usage related to travel, which is, and this is an official process. This is an official process of maybe letting them know I'm here. And this is often an essential beginning thing to make another thing happen. So you are flying somewhere, you get to the airport, you go to the check-in counter, it's called the check-in counter, and you get your boarding pass. You show them your passport, right? This is the check-in process. It's an official process that allows you to get the thing that you need, and you're giving usually some information. Now, you can also do usually a self-check-in or an automated check-in at some kind of kiosk. So often these days, there's a kiosk where you can check in by yourself, right? So it doesn't have to be with a person. It often is. When you go to a hotel, when you get there, you have to get your key. You have to maybe give them your passport. You have to answer some questions. You maybe have to put your credit card on file in case you destroy the room. Well, this is an official process where you check in. And for anything like this, check-in is often the word that is used. Now, this is not used for transactions. For transactions, especially at a store, for example, a supermarket, that would be check out. To check out at the store would be to pay, to leave, to pay and leave, right? Check in is the beginning official process usually to get a thing, to get a service, to go somewhere that you want to go, right? When you go into those big buildings in New York City and Manhattan, I've been in a few for meetings and things, and you have to check in with the security at the front desk before they'll let you in. If you don't check in with them, they will not let you into the building. You have to say who you're meeting, what time the meeting is, how long the meeting is going to last, right? And then they'll give you a temporary security pass, right? You have to check in, and you check in at the hotel, and you check in when you go to a doctor's office, right? You go to get a physical examination or get your teeth cleaned or whatever. The first thing you do is you check in. I check in online when I take, for example, my son to his pediatric appointments. They have this cool thing where you can do an online check-in. They send you a reminder text message, and then they say, don't forget to check in. They send it 3 days before the appointment. Then you go through the check-in process online. You have to give them some information, the birthday, and sometimes you have to pay something. And then you get a code. And then when you scan the code on the day of the appointment, you just go in. And they say, oh, you can skip check-in because you have the code, right? So that's pretty cool. So the check-in would be if you didn't have the code. All right. So let's look at some simple examples here just to review. We need to check in at the airport 2 hours before our flight. Again, talking about our time, because we need plenty of time to go through security and all of that stuff. Upon arriving, we checked in at the front desk of the hotel. So again, this is exactly what I was just describing, just to show you a couple of specific examples. You can do that at a doctor's office. You can do that in all kinds of different places. And you can require other people to check in if you're running an event or something. Maybe before they go into the event or something like that, you have them check in. All right? We have a couple more we're going to do here. The next one is look around. To look around. Now, the simple physical meaning of this is to use your head and your eyeballs to look in different directions, right? But that's not how we usually use it. It's a little more nuanced than that. So, for example, you walk into a shop and the shop attendant says to you, how can I help? And you say, I'm just looking around. Well, if you're just looking around, are you doing this with your head and your eyes? No. You are casually browsing in the shop. You are looking at things. You don't have a goal or a purpose, right? That's really the underlying meaning. Without a clear goal, usually. I suppose you could use it sometimes if there's a goal, but the general feeling that you get with look around is it's casual, it's relaxed, it's informal, it's here and there. There's no set path. There's no clear direction. It's whatever I feel like doing in the moment, right? It is about looking at things. It is about seeing things. It is about maybe buying something in the case of the shop. But I'm not here to buy a specific thing. If I go into the shop and the shopkeeper says, how can I help you? Can I help you find anything? And I say, yes, I'm looking for a waffle iron, a very specific thing that I need, right? That is not looking around. That is not looking around. But again, the general meaning of look around, the more common one, is not actually doing this. It is actually casually, informally browsing. Okay? And you can do that online too. So there you're looking at your computer screen or your phone screen, right? But you're still looking around maybe on Amazon or something like that. You don't know what you want to buy, but you're just kind of casually browsing. What are you doing? Oh, I'm just looking around. Right? Casually browsing on Amazon. So let's look at a couple of examples here. We had some free time to look around the city before our meeting. And after we arrived, we decided to look around the local markets. To look around the local markets. Okay, so this is something we're only doing because we have extra time, right? There's a meeting happening. That is our real goal. Well, what are we going to do before our meeting? We have 3 hours to kill. We have 3 hours to kill. What should we do? We could just look around the city. Maybe we go to downtown. Maybe we go to a cafe. Maybe we see a famous statue, or see if we can catch a penguin, a pigeon, not a penguin. Usually, penguins are not usually just walking around cities, right? So the feeling is that it's kind of aimless. And in this case, it's actually there to fill time or kill time. After we arrived, we decided to look around the local markets. Now, maybe I know I want to buy something. I know I want to buy an item of clothing. So I do have something in mind. Can I still use look around? Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. The difference between using look around and using something else is that if I know exactly what it is that I want, then I won't use look around. But even if I have some general goal or criteria or goal, even if it's general, I can still use look around. I want to buy a sweater and I want it in kind of a local style. So I know I want an item of clothing, maybe a sweater, something warm. I didn't want to take my own sweater, so I want to buy something to stay warm here on this trip. But I don't know. I'll decide when I get there. So I get there. I look around. Now, I could look around the winter clothing section. So I get into the shop and they say, can I help you? Oh, yeah, I'm looking for the winter clothes. Oh, over there. Once I get there, now I'm looking around the winter clothes to find maybe a sweater that I want or need, right? And so this, it's very flexible. It's very flexible. And the feeling there is that it's kind of a bit aimless, a bit casual, a bit freestyle, and there isn't one clear specific thing that I need. I went to buy the iPhone 17. Well, then you're not looking around, are you? But after I bought my iPhone 17, I decided to look around a bit. So I did both. I went to buy a thing, specific thing. I got that specific thing, and then I looked around a bit. Okay? Hopefully that is very, 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 very extremely clear. I should mention one thing about this, actually, before we move on from look around. You can have a specific thing in mind and look around for it. But if you look around for a specific thing, then it is more like the first thing that I said. That it's more like that. So if I say I looked around for my keys and I couldn't find them, my keys are somewhere. I don't know where my keys are. So I'm doing this. I'm walking around the house doing this. You know, I'm looking down, I'm looking up, I'm looking over. It's more like that. So if I'm looking for a specific thing and I say I'm looking around for my keys, I'm looking in all different places. That's the around part. I'm moving all around. I don't know where they are. But that's more like that. More like the original meaning. She looked around the room for a familiar face. You get to a party. It would be great if I weren't just here with a bunch of strangers. Is there anybody I know here? Oh, Barry's here, right? Oh, there's Barry. Oh, Barry. Oh, hey, Barry, right? So I'm looking around for what? For a specific thing? What am I looking for? Ah, a face I know. There's Barry, right? So hopefully you get the picture, but obviously the key is to, you know, make your own examples and look at more examples and really try to get a feeling for it. Okay. The next one is drop off. Now, to drop something off is to leave something there, wherever there is, right? To not give it directly to a person, but leave it somewhere for another person to then get it themselves. And that could be at a school. It could be a person. It could be a thing. It could be at an airport. It's very flexible. And it doesn't have to be... Oh, sorry, the siren. Better? So, for drop off, when you drop something or someone off, you're not doing the next thing. So if you drop a friend off at the train station, right, they visited you or you met them at a coffee shop and then they don't have a car, so you drive them to the train station. You don't get on the train with them, right? If you drop your sister off at the airport, you don't go into the airport usually with her. You're in the car and you leave her there and she then does her thing, checks in, goes through security and boards her flight. If you drop off your son at school, you're not going to the school with your son. Usually he's just getting out of the car and going into the school. And so there's a sense of leaving something or someone there, right? If you're not home and I drop off a pan full of muffins that I made, maybe I left them on the shelf next to your front door outside. You better hurry up and get them so that they don't get too cold. So I leave them there for you to get. It's a general sense of leaving something in a specific place, or someone, of course, in a specific place. But I think we should probably look at a couple of examples to really get the idea here. So drop off. Can you drop me off at the train station on your way to work? Can you take me to the train station? Can you bring me to the train station? I guess these are pretty much the same thing. Can you take me to the train station? Can you bring me to the train station? Pretty much the same. But it really suggests I'm leaving you there and I'm not going in. We dropped off our luggage at the hotel and went straight to the beach. Now, this is a very common thing that you will do when you're on a trip. So a hotel will have a check-in time of, say, 3 p.m. I once stayed at a hotel that had a check-in time of, was very late. It was 4 p.m. or something. And I arrived at the hotel at, I was exhausted, 10 a.m. So I had a long time before I could check in. I had all these bags with me. And so I went to the front desk at the hotel and I said, hey, could I please leave my bags here, maybe with you? And they said, sure, absolutely. So what did I do? Well, I went to the hotel, I dropped off my luggage, and then I went to the beach. I want to spend time at the beach. I don't want to spend time just sitting here waiting to check in. So I haven't even checked in yet. I haven't checked in at all. What have I done? I have left my bags at the hotel. They're holding them for me, right? But it suggests that I'm just leaving them right there and they're taking care of them. I'm not doing anything with them, right? So drop off is used for objects, things in this way. I'll drop off the keys tomorrow. Maybe you need the keys to access something. I'll drop them off tomorrow. It could be that you're there and I give the keys to you in person. It doesn't mean only that you're not there in person. It could be. But often it's whether you're there or not. So if you aren't there, then I'll just leave them somewhere. So that's another part of it. It's even if no one's at the hotel front desk, I may still just leave my bags behind the check-in counter, right? Maybe. Okay. All right. Finally, we have stick around. To stick around is to stay near something or someone. or to stay in a particular place. But it's a casual feeling, and usually it's voluntary, right? It's different than saying, I had to stay. I couldn't leave. Maybe one time there was a visa issue. I couldn't leave someplace. So I didn't say, well, I'll just stick around the hotel here or in this country here while I figure out my visa thing. No, I had to be there. I couldn't leave. It was a problem. I had to work out the visa thing. I got to figure it out finally, and it turned out really well. But usually if I want to stick around someplace, let's say, for example, I'm on a trip and the destination is way better than I expected. I'm there with my friends. We decided we were going to stay for 5 days and then fly home. I love it so much. You guys fly home. I'm going to actually call the airline and have them delay my flight a few days. I'll see if I can reschedule it. I'm going to stick around for at least 3 or 4 more days because it's just so nice here. It's so relaxing. I love it. I'm going to stick around for a few more days. You can stick around a person too, right? You can say directly to a person, hey, could you stick around after the meeting today? There's something I want to talk to you about. Stick around after the meeting. So I'm asking you to just stay when everyone else is leaving because there's something important I need to talk to you about. That's the general idea. And usually, again, it is a voluntary thing, something that either someone asks us to do or that we really want to do. And in the context of travel, it's probably something that we want to do. Let's see. Oops. Why is there a one here? Why is there a one? Tell me why. I don't know why. Why is there a one? I want to know why. Okay, so after a long day of sightseeing, we decided to... Wait, what? Where's my stick around? What? Okay, my example's wrong. My example is incorrect. Here, let's do this. I got the wrong examples here. Let's just create our own here. Say, the weather was so nice, I decided to stick around a few more days. And then we could say, are you planning to stick around here the whole trip? Or actually go out and do something? Okay. When you don't have examples, make some examples. So the weather was so nice, I decided to stick around a few more days. We talked about generally how we use that, voluntarily stay. Are you planning to stick around here the whole trip or actually go out and do something? Maybe I've become addicted to gambling or something and there's a casino and I'm just hanging out there and playing cards or doing slot machines and I'm not doing anything else. So I'm just sticking around here. And maybe not going to the beach, not going for hikes, or anything like that. Okay? So, hopefully all of these are clear. Make your own examples. If you have any questions, let me know. And good luck with using these in your daily life. All right. Okay. Here's one other thing I wanted to go cover. What happened with my example? That was weird. So weird. Okay, there are some other ones I want to cover. I'm really curious to hear how the sound is after this, because I know there's more traffic noise. And I know that's not good. And I want to see if it can be improved. All right. Last thing we're going to talk about today is pet peeves. Everyone has things that bother them. I am no different. Now, I'm not saying this stuff because I'm an English teacher. I'm just saying this is stuff that bothers me. And I will say that most of this stuff that bothers me, most of these pet peeves, are things that native English speakers do. Yes. They commit crimes against me whenever they do them. It's a crime. All of these things should be crimes. Well, they are crimes, according to me. But let's talk about them. I'm going to tell you what it is and then the correct way to do it. And you can decide for yourself if you want to. If you already do this, make the correction. And if you don't and you didn't know about it, decide if you want to do it my way or follow the norm. Because a lot of this stuff is very normal for a lot of people, a lot of native English speakers to use. The first one is, I could care less. Something happens. And maybe we're all worried. A group of friends is all, we're all worried, right? What if it snows and our flight gets canceled and we can't go? Well, maybe three friends traveling in a group together, planning to go on this trip. What if it snows? What if there's a snowstorm? One person wasn't really into it to begin with and staying home, going on a trip, I don't care. So they say, I could care less. I could care less. What they mean by that is it doesn't matter to me. If it snows and the flight gets canceled, we don't go on the trip, we go, whatever, I don't care. The problem is not what they're trying to say. The problem is that this is actually incorrect. If you think about it, I could care less. What does that mean? That means it is possible for me to care less. Well, then why would you say that? What you want to say is, I couldn't care less. That's what you really want to say. If you couldn't care less, then you really don't care. That's probably the right phrase to use. And it bothers me when people say, I could care less. Although, among the, you know, crimes, the pet peeves that we're going to talk about here, this one is probably the least severe. Okay, next one. On accident. I did it on accident. On accident. Well, we know what that means. If somebody sent an email they weren't supposed to send, it wasn't ready. Well, I did that on accident. When people hear that, they won't say, oh, you idiot, you used the wrong preposition. It might just, in the back of their mind, cause them to judge something about whoever said it. Because it should be by accident. By accident. And I will admit, I will be the first person to admit that I do judge people, especially native English speakers. I don't choose to, it's not my choice, I don't want to judge anybody, but I do it unconsciously, I can't help it. So it should be by accident, not on accident, okay? Next one, this one's tough for me. I seen it, or maybe that, or you, or whatever here, okay? I seen it. When I hear this, my brain goes, uneducated. What is going on? A scene is a form of the verb see. The simple past tense is saw. And this particular form is called a past participle. Now, we use the past participle typically when we're using a particular tense. In this case, the tense would be the present perfect tense or the past perfect tense. If it's the present perfect tense, then it would be I have seen. And if it's the past perfect tense, then it would be I had seen. Now, these will then be conjugated to be I've seen and I'd seen. And that's fine. So if you say I'd seen it or I've seen it, totally correct. But you will often hear people say, I seen it. Drives me crazy. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. It's bad karma. Nip it in the butt. So hear people say this. This is to end something that's going on that should stop, right? You're smoking and you want to quit. Somebody is maybe doing something dishonest. A colleague you know is doing something dishonest. You are an employer or a boss, and you see there's a problem with the company culture. People are taking sick days when they're not supposed to take sick days, or they're not actually sick. So say, listen, I just need to nip this in the butt. I just need to nip this in the butt. You hear a lot of people say that. Hey, listen, if this bothers you, nip it in the butt. Basically, which means end it. Just end that. End it. But actually, it should not be but. People say but all the time. It should be bud. Nip it in the bud. A bud is on the branch of a tree, the little thing that comes out before the leaf comes out, right? The first this thing comes out in the springtime, and then it grows into a big leaf. Well, this is the bud. And if you nip something in the bud, you trim it before it starts to grow. Basically, this means end it before it gets really bad. End it before it grows into a leaf or a bad thing. I'm not saying leaves are bad, but end it before it becomes a real problem, a bigger problem, even bigger, right? Nip it in the bud, the bud. So this is a reference to the buds of plants and trees and flowers. Okay. And by the way, the last two we're going to talk about, which are similar, are the biggest ones for me that really bother me. One that you see in text, often this is comments, messages, and emails, sometimes texts. I'm much more relaxed about texts, but especially for comments and emails, especially, this is a written issue, is your and your. This pronunciation of these two is they're the same, right? These two have exactly the same pronunciation. And so if you're speaking, this is not an issue. Now, I would say it might be an issue because if in your brain, your mind is saying this one when actually you mean this one, then I still think it's a problem. But since thought crimes are not yet possible to keep track of, when they are, I will definitely point this out first. Well, when you're writing, you need to understand which one is which. Your house. So the house belongs to you. This your is the same as my and our and their. It indicates belonging to you, to me, to us, to them. Their house, our house, my house, your house. This your is you are. So if you this is the most ironic YouTube comment of all time, you're so dumb. You see that? You're so dumb is an admission of being dumb. You're so dumb. I don't necessarily think that that's always true, because it could be a simple typo. If it's a typo, okay. But if you're just writing something and you write this instead of you are your, what you're telling people is, you're telling people, I don't know the difference between these two. And that's a problem. That's a problem. Literally. 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 This is literally the hardest thing I've ever done. Now, the meaning of the word literally is that it is actually that. That is what it means. And so if you say that, then what you should mean is that it actually is the hardest thing you've ever done. Well, is it really though? I mean, people are just, studying for an exam. People will say literally to mean something like, this is very hard. This is very easy. This is very good. When actually what it means is, what I'm saying is exactly true, right? And often it's a superlative. So literally the best. These are superlatives. Literally the best. Literally the worst. Literally the hardest. Right? And so if you're saying the best, you mean actually the best. You're reviewing your entire life, right? And you're saying, this is literally the best ice cream I've ever had. Now, when I hear people say that, I say, oh, in my mind, really? This is the best in your life. It must be pretty good. But I think when most people are using it, they use it so liberally, so freely, that they don't actually mean literally the best, literally the worst, literally the most. What they mean is a lot. It's very good. I mean, it's good. But they're not actually reviewing their entire life. I will be honest, I have been guilty of using this one occasionally, but I don't like when I do it. Okay, it's a bit of a pet peeve. But I think it's kind of a choice. Either the meaning of the word literally will start to shift in meaning over time, or it will be reclaimed for its original meaning. Finally, and I'm going to put these two together. Espresso and etc. Now, these are incorrectly spelled. Actually, it should be espresso. I'll write it up here. I'll do a check mark. Correct. Ding, ding, ding. Wrong. And etc. Wrong. Should be tick, tick. Et cetera or cetera. Okay, so most people will say espresso. Can I get a double shot of espresso? Espresso? Can I get a double shot of espresso? And they think it's actually called espresso. That's what people think it's actually called. It's espresso. It's espresso, okay? Etc. Etc. It is etc. Now, I know that that's a little trickier to say. This is what most people say. It kind of bothers me. Etc. You can say etc. or etc. etc. or etc. Both are generally acceptable. But if you say etc., that's not, you're saying a letter, X, that is not actually there in the word. This is the correct spelling of the word. So you should say the T sound generally. I know, I understand that all of these are losing battles, okay? I know that these are just pet peeves that I have, and I know that people don't have to listen to me. But because I'm not talking to native English speakers, because I am an English teacher teaching non-native English speakers how to correctly speak, I feel the need to bring these things up, these things that native English speakers do that you could very easily learn since so many people are doing them, that I think would be better to say the correct way because it gives a good impression. It makes you sound more intelligent when you speak. It allows you to represent yourself well. So these are not just things that annoy me. These are things that I think if you learn the right way will allow you to be a better, more accurate, more intelligent sounding English speaker, okay? If you have any questions about these, let me know in the comments. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to hit the like button and subscribe and get a free course in the links in the description. All right. All right, I think we're going to call it a day, folks. Friends, neighbors, citizens, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. If there were sound issues today, I'm going to go back and review, see how it sounds. I'm working on that to improve it. But again, thank you for joining. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. If you're listening and you would like to watch, you can do that on YouTube and I suppose Facebook. If you're watching and you would sometimes prefer to listen, the link's in the description. Find the platform that works for you, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever you prefer. So have a great whatever it is. Have a fantastic day. Thanks again, and I will see you in the next one.